16% of the 25-26 NBA season is complete. And after a week where we saw y'all dropping buzzer beaters thanks to Desmond Bane and Andrew Wiggins, with several overtime thrillers to go beside a pair of 36 and over future Hall of Famers constructing 40-point outings, as another added a 30-point performance all on the same night, it is now time to look back on the week that was while also looking ahead to what all lies next. What's happening, everyone, and welcome to the new 24. The Dwight Howard second tour of duty with the Lakers episode is this marks number 39 for those keeping score. Wherever you're listening to us from, as we appreciate you tapping in as always, I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins. And as always, I'm joined right beside my co-host and Torrence Stagger to talk on all things hoops. What's going on?
Feeling good, feeling great. Having to name this episode after Dwight Howard's stint as a role player for the Los Angeles Lakers is pretty interesting. I think that means 39 is a trash jersey number, but we move.
Hey, he won a ring in it. But for those of you who are avid listeners of the show and want to hit us with your thoughts on the topics we speak on and more, you can hit us up on our official email account at tntfpod@gmail.com. Plus, follow our social media handles on IG and Twitter at @TNTF_ if you like what you hear, to get all you need as it pertains to giving news or info regarding the show. You can also find our episodes and series such as Faces of the League on the podcast platforms you use to listen to your favorite podcasts, or by subscribing to our feed at rss.com/podcast/TNTF to ensure you're the first to listen as soon as a new episode drops. And let's jump straight into things by discussing a particular team that holds the record for most consecutive winning seasons with 14 and are trying to figure out a way to extend it to a 15th season in the LA Clippers. LA's gotten off to a very sluggish start to open up the year as they enter the week sitting a game out of 10th place for the final play-in spot out in the West with a 4-9 record, a matter you could easily attribute to injuries, which has been quite the norm when it comes to this franchise, as their offseason acquisition in Bradley Beal was recently ruled out for the year due to a fractured hip. Derrick Jones Jr. recently sustained a sprained MCL in his right knee and will be reevaluated in 6 weeks. Kawhi Leonard has also missed the last several games with an ankle and foot issue, even though he's said to be near return, according to Law Murray of The Athletic. Yet despite all this, they managed to post a 2-0 record in NBA Cup group play after pulling off a thrilling win in double OT against the Mavs out in Dallas with the help of James Harden's spectacular 41-point triple-double performance, as the Clippers are tied with their crosstown rival Lakers atop of Group B in the West and will face off against them in group play during the first battle for Los Angeles matchup this year next Tuesday in a showdown that could very well determine who has the upper hand in advancing to the knockout round.
So I've been talking to Gabe about basketball, sports, everything in between for about 14, 15 years at this point. And two things that I know he has a bias towards: James Harden, and for some odd reason, the Los Angeles Clippers. He wants to see great things happen to them, even though they're the most cursed franchise in the league. Over the weekend, he proposed something very interesting to me. The possibility of the Los Angeles Clippers winning the NBA Cup, but also missing the NBA playoffs this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a unique thing if that were to happen, because when you look at the relatively brief history of the event, you've had a pair of teams in the Milwaukee Bucks and the LA Lakers take home the Cup crown and make it to the playoffs, although both teams ended up bowing out early in the first round. But when you look at this Clippers squad, they have a veteran-laden roster. James Harden is in the midst of having a career season where he's averaging the most points since his 2019-20 campaign, which was his final full season with the Houston Rockets when he finished third MVP voting. He's also in the midst of his most efficient season with a 65% true shooting percentage. And he's also hitting a career high mark 39.8% of his threes, all the while carrying a massive offensive burden. And he's using more isolation possessions than any other player in the league, according to data from NBA.com. I think based upon the way that I've heard guys over there talk about it, such as Tyronn Lue, about how important these games are, and seeing some of the close contests that they found a way to navigate through in their first two games of cup play, be it with New Orleans, where you saw Kawhi Leonard hit a clutch game winner at the buzzer, and then James Harden willing that team to victory. I just think it would be a significant deal to guys like them, guys that are oftentimes ridiculed by the media for various reasons. In Kawhi's case, you take the injuries. James Harden, his playoff performances when he doesn't live up to the bill. You have a lot of people that like to shit on him for that. And then you have Ivica Zubac, who's one of the more underrated bigs in the league. And although he's had some ups and downs this year, a lot of that could be attributed to a lot of the double teams that he's drawn and facing in the games in which Kawhi isn't playing. But I just think that it would be kind of cool to see. And at some point, I do believe it's going to happen, whether it's with the Clippers or not, where you have a team that ends up taking this event and they don't make it to the playoffs. And some people might try and laugh about that or whatnot, but at some point, let's be real, it's going to happen. And I think for a franchise like the Clippers, who are often a butt of a lot of people's jokes, being the second team in Los Angeles, as we know it's a Laker town and always will be and forever, I think it would mean a lot to that fan base. And you even have some members of that fan base across Twitter spaces saying, well, hey, we've won half of our games this season thus far in cup play. So why not try and go for it with the way in which James Harden is playing at an elite level, looking like an all-star yet once again, and then Kawhi Leonard set to return any day now if you can get to it. And maybe you have a young piece such as Kobe Sanders, who's been coming along and is going to get a lot of minutes now in the wake of Bradley Beal's injury and Derrick Jones Jr.'s injury, step up and take that run.
See, I shit on the Clippers a lot, but by this, I'm convinced by the possibility of it. When you mentioned the veteran teams, you mentioned the Lakers and the Bucks, and then you also mentioned OKC and the Pacers, the two losers from the championship games in the NBA Cup, making it to the finals last season. So it's a very important tournament, and you can kind of pace it out. It's four games in group play. They already won two. You got Kawhi coming back from injury. You can almost line it up if it's that important to you. Like, hey, he gonna play these two group play games. He gonna rest whatever game or two is in between that. And if we make it to the knockout round, I mean, schedule all clear for us to play those games. And what? You think you gotta win two games in the knockout round?
You have to win one to get to the semifinals in Vegas. If you win two, you get to the championship.
So we're talking about five games? Why not? And James Harden, he's been locked in this season. They got a great defensive foundation with this team. When you mention guys like Kawhi and James Harden, you're not thinking defense first at this stage in their career. I mean, Kawhi gonna always be the claw, so you're gonna always give him that. But we know he's not moving the same defensively as he once did consistently. And like you said, I think it may be time for James Harden to win something. It's the feeling I felt when Dame won last year. You know, I know people are going to be like, oh, this tournament isn't this, it isn't that. As in the great words of the GOAT, Michael Jordan, it's about winning something, team championships at that. It's not always about the individual accolades. And this will be an opportunity for even Kawhi Leonard. He's had a great legacy with the LA Clippers, despite all of the injuries. They've had their most success pretty much under him. And you mentioned they've been a winning team the last 14 seasons. I think Kawhi's been there 6, maybe 7 years now. And they got to the Western Conference Finals for the first time with him leading them there. I know he took an injury the round before, but he was watching those playoffs. Kawhi led them to the conference finals. So, I mean, why not? Why not this be the opportunity for them to do it? Because as you pointed out, I think they may miss the playoffs at this point. It's very possible. They're already dealing with the injuries. They're already down in the standings, and we know how tough the Western Conference is. Why not lock in on this part?
Yeah, it's very possible, even if they were to get within the thick of the play-in, when you get off to a sluggish start like they have, it's an uphill battle to try and climb your way back into that top six. Now, if they did miss the playoffs and James Harden, a guy that's been the subject of a lot of trade chatter in the NBA Twitterverse, wasn't to get moved, it would mark the first time in his career that he's never made it to the playoffs. So if that's the case, why not go all out and try and win an NBA cup? Something that I think would mean a lot to him and should mean a lot to him and guys that haven't gotten that ring yet in their careers, because it helps stamp the event. And I think it does mean a lot. And I really enjoy the NBA Cup. And I just find it fascinating that the Clippers, despite having a plus 2 point differential in the event, have a shot at getting there if they can overcome their crosstown rival, which would leave them with only one other game left in group play in the finale against the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that, just like them, had a lot of high expectations, but has stumbled mightily out of the gate. So they're definitely a team worth monitoring in that event, if nothing more.
I'll get them a chance in group play. I'll say that much. That Lakers game will be interesting. We'll see if LeBron will be back in time for that game and Kawhi Leonard. I doubt if both will be playing in that game, but if they can win that game, there's no reason for them to not have a chance in that knockout round.
Oh yeah, like I'm not saying that they're automatic locked to win the NBA Cup at all, but I do see a pathway to Vegas for them, which if they were to get there, anything can happen. And it all comes down to the knockout round matchups as well. But moving away from the opening conversation pertaining to the NBA Cup odds of the LA Clippers to a couple of off-the-court stories that surfaced over the last several days involving a pair of all-stars. During the top of the week, it was announced that Cade Cunningham of the Detroit Pistons reached a new 6-year agreement to officially re-sign with Nike and will receive his own signature shoe that is expected to debut during the second half of the 26-27 season, making the 24-year-old the first Pistons player to ever receive his own signature shoe with the Swoosh brand. While just days prior to Cunningham's announcement, we'd find out that Golden State Warriors superstar Stephen Curry and Under Armour officially parted ways as a standalone Endeavor Curry brand will move forward independently.
Once again, gotta give Gabe a shout out for seeing the future. He caught this Cade Cunningham Nike signature shoe thing a while ago. I believe he may have spoken on it in episode 8 of Faces of the League as well. And back in college, he was the first person to say, "Hey, I think Kyrie Irving gonna be the next signature shoe guy on Nike." And that happened. And even Paul George, which is to this day still unbelievable to me, that Paul George had his own signature shoe with Nike. And I do believe that's the slot Cade Cunningham is going to slide into at Nike as far as signature athletes, because they're very successful. Ja Morant didn't get his shoe until Kyrie Irving was gone. So they only keep but so many spots. So shout out to Cade Cunningham, but shout out to Gabe because I didn't see it.
Anytime Nike gives guys personalized logos, I always feel like that's the first step in introducing a signature athlete, because every player isn't afforded that privilege or luxury with the brand to have that. And Kyrie Irving, when he got his signature logo before he got his first shoe on his PE models, that was kind of like the inkling for me that led me to say, well, hey, he's the next guy up. And he was. And the same thing happened with Paul George. And we saw the debut of Cade Cunningham's logo at the top of this year when he had it on the GT Cuts that he wears on the player exclusive models. So that's what led me to believe that Cade Cunningham was the guy. I'm very happy for him. And even though he's with an established brand and he won't be the marquee face of Nike basketball, I would hope that Nike utilizes him in a way that's unique from what they did with Paul George and Devin Booker. And what I mean by that is incorporating him in advertisements, maybe introducing people to Cade Cunningham that may not be aware of Cade Cunningham, and having sports figures associated with the city of Detroit in advertisements that may have ties to the Nike brand, be it past or present, such as George Gervin being one of them. Maybe you have him in an advertisement. Maybe you incorporate some people that's a part of the music scene in Detroit, such as V's, Babyface Ray, and even some of the older people like Anita Baker and whatnot, ad where you introduce people to not only Cade Cunningham, but the city of Detroit, the city that he represents, and he takes pride in doing so each and every night he takes the floor. So I really think that they could do a lot of special things with Cade. And I'm not saying that they have to have a marketing campaign that's on the level of Anthony Edwards with Adidas, but I would like for them to utilize it in some capacity more so than what they have in recent years.
Hey man, all I know is we gonna have to put you in the meeting because you've been campaigning for this dude the last couple of years, and I've been wanting to talk a lot of BS about it, but he keeps coming through for you. He keeps coming through. You clearly want him in that SGA Ant duo thing that we got going on, which would be cool because I mean they all about the same age. We talking about guards. We talking about the next generation of NBA superstars, and outside of it being a property of Nike. I mean, it's pretty much on the same level as Adidas and Converse, pretty much. So it'd be an even fight between the three. But moving on to Steph Curry, speaking of brands around the same level, Under Armour's been falling off a cliff for a long time. Steph Curry decided to jump ship and he got to keep his logo, which I don't know if a lot of people realize that's a pretty big deal. Most guys don't get to leave with their logo. That was a big thing with Kawhi moving to New Balance. When he made that move, he wasn't able to take his original Claw KL2 logo with him, which was crazy good. Crazy, crazy good. A lot of good merch with that logo. But man, Wardell, Brandon Jennings was the first guy to pretty much put Under Armour basketball on the map. But Steph Curry, 2015, we know that was Under Armour's peak. They had Cam Newton, Bryce Harper, Steph, and one more person that was the MVP of their
Tom
league.
Brady.
Tom Brady. Yeah, I don't associate Tom Brady with Under Armour for some reason. But anyway, that was the peak. And I always said that Steph not playing in the 2016 Olympics did a lot of damage to his brand and Under Armour. That was going to be their opportunity to put together a global marketing campaign for him. And really elevate the brand because design wise, not a great shoe. Not a great shoe. I think he got 11 models with them. Klay and Steph did a lot of damage in some of the worst sneakers ever. Klay Answers, Steph Under Armours did a lot of damage in them shoes. The big question everybody wants to know is where is Steph taking the Curry brand? We know that Nike, which a lot of people will say is one of the big what ifs in the sneaker world, Steph. Leaving Nike. Thanks to Nico Harrison, by the way, who was in control of his account, I believe. And if you go read that story, didn't seem to really care much about Steph's relationship with the company. Treated him as if he was just another Nike athlete. Adidas is coming with great designs and great campaigns, as you mentioned with Ant. Draymond is over at Converse. And we see what Ant is doing with Kyrie Irving. So it's sky's the limit with him. Where do you see this going, if anywhere?
I'm not sure, but I would hope that he would be willing and open-minded to take the independent path if the opportunity presents itself or he's not able to find an opportunity with a brand that's too good to pass up. You look at the sneaker industry over the last decade or so, moments like these are, in my opinion, what LeVar Ball was pushing for with Big Baller Brand. And you saw the trickle-down effect, which led to brands such as Puma and Converse getting back into the basketball space. And then a guy like Jaylen Brown coming into the league, signing with Adidas in the early going, but then declaring sneaker free agency. And after not seeing deals that he wanted to his liking, said, well, I'll just start my own sneaker brand and athletic line called 741 Performance and unveil this to the world and let people know, like, hey, you don't have to take the traditional path if you don't want to, and you could build your own company up. I would hope that's what he does with Curry Brand. I wasn't a big fan of Stephen Curry Under Armour shoes like most people, but it is kind of funny that in some ways, like you always used to say, he did bring back the dead shoe on some levels, especially in the year 2016, where you saw some of the low-cut SC2 models. I would say that's probably when they had their most success. I always wonder whether or not if Golden State had went back to back in 15 and 16, would he have gone to Rio and tried to double up and get that gold medal on top of the NBA Finals, which he would have had if they didn't drop that 3-1 series lead to Cleveland? We'll never know, but I've always thought that with what he's doing with the Curry brand, enticing athletes such as De'Aaron Fox, who was a UA guy, to be a part of that brand, if he was able to get other players from the grassroots level coming into the league to be a part of it, it would extend his name even more. And I think that's the purpose of probably why he's even trying to do such a thing and parting ways with Under Armour, whose basketball division really hasn't been able to take off like people thought it would, even with Steph and even before Steph, with Brandon Jennings, who, as we know, and like you said, was the first guy to sign with them when we knew them mostly at the time prior to that for football.
Now, outside of all of the business and influence aspects of it, you talk about Steph Curry changing brands. The most important thing is going to be who's going to protect his ankles, because he started to really have his health and come into his own with Under Armour. When he was getting hurt, it was those Nike shoes. We see LaMelo, where he going through with his ankles, and he's over at Puma. I'm curious as to who's going to provide the best support for him in the latter stage of his career.
If I'm not mistaken, when he unveiled his first shoe with Under Armour, and I could be wrong, but I believe he started wearing high tops a little bit more. Because when he was with Nike, he wore more three-quarter type design. Now, over time, the shoe evolved to where he went back into three-quarters. But then by that point, I think he had his own like ankle brace too that he was starting to wear, which is something that you didn't see him wear a lot of early in his career. And maybe that did help him significantly with his ankles to some level.
And that's why he did a great troll by wearing those Kobes during the warm-up. He wasn't gonna take that risk on the court wearing those shoes, and
Yeah, I knew that too.
they not built for his feet like his own shoes are. He's gonna keep wearing his shoes, probably cover up the Under Armour logo if they're any visible on the shoe. But outside of that, I'm curious to see where this goes.
Segueing away from the talk on signature shoe lines as it pertains to All-Stars, to talking on a squad that is led by one of the game's best in the Denver Nuggets, who enter the week only behind their Western Conference foes in the Houston Rockets and Oklahoma City Thunder in offensive and defensive rating through the first 4 weeks of the season, and only trail the defending champion Thunder by a couple of games in the standings, led by none other than the three-time MVP Nikola Jokic, who recently took Western Conference Player of the Week honors for the second straight week after averaging 39 points, 13 rebounds, and 8 dimes per game on 73% shooting from the floor and 64% shooting from three through only 3 games played last week. Denver's taking care of business. Jokic, what else is new? Averaging triple-double yet once again. He's leading the league in assists, if not among the top in assists, which as a big man is very impressive. And I can't really recall a time where I've seen a center do that. I think the play of Jamal Murray has been very well for this team, and the bench has been impressive also. However, the one thing Denver is going to have to learn how to do as time goes along is finding out how to pull out games in clutch time. They have a 0-3 record as of this recording in clutch games. And a lot of that could be attributed to Nikola Jokic's defensive issues in space, where we saw the Chicago Bulls attack him a ton in Spain pick and roll coverages, which in turn proved to be problematic. But to Jokic's credit, he's taking accountability for that. And he was saying it was a lot of communication issues. But I think they're on the right track. And although it remains to be seen whether Cam Johnson can recover from his slow start, you can't really complain about too much if you're David Adelman in your first full season under the helm.
Oh, there's a couple of things new with Nikola Jokic. Main one, everybody's always like, well, how can he top himself from last year? Especially if he wants to win another MVP. He has a career high in field goal percentage, which means he's getting even more dominant, especially one-on-one against whoever's guarding him, on top of the assist, as you mentioned. Jonas Valanciunas is also a big part of that, too. I think he's proven to be their biggest offseason move. Yeah, Tim Hardaway stepped in. He's averaging double-digit points, knocking down a three, being a true professional. He's been throughout the duration of his career, keeping a job as always. Shout out to Roseland's own, his father. Cam Johnson. Y'all told me for years, oh man, just get Cam Johnson to a contender. He's 3 and D. He's just wasting away over there in Brooklyn. It seemed like we need to start calling him a podcaster like y'all talk about Paul George. I mean, everybody else over here successful. Dude is literally averaging less than 1 3 per game. And they brought you to the team to hit threes. He seems uncomfortable. He seems timid. But I believe that he'll turn it around. Like, literally, he was playing in low-tier basketball in Brooklyn. So I can understand this being a little bit different. Well, he's going to have to step it up because they're going to need all that he can provide to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. You mentioned the Nuggets being 0-3 in the clutch, and that's all Shai's been over the last few seasons is clutch, closing games out night after night in the Western Conference. And that's who you got to beat. He's the man with the belt right now. As great as Jokic is playing, I know there's a lot of people campaigning for him to be MVP early, but Shai ain't fell off. Shai numbers still impressive as well, too. And he got the top record in the West.
Yeah, I agree with you on SGA. I still think he's at the top of the MVP power ladder in my book. I know it's a lot of guys that such as Luka and Jokic that have made it a conversation as of recent times, but I get where you're coming from with that. In regards to Cam Johnson, the one thing that's been his saving grace, in my opinion, are the guys such as THJ, who you mentioned, Peyton Watson, Bruce Brown, Julian Schroder, guys that have been excellent off the bench. And with them being deep at the wing position, that's been a benefit to the club and allowing Johnson to find himself before it's too late. Now, he opened up this week with a nice game against the Bulls, made the corner threes that he was getting in catch and shoot situation. I believe he almost had 20 points in that game as he finished the night with 19. But if, like you say, you look at the numbers across the board, it's definitely a decrease in production. And it goes back to what we were talking about on 30 teams in 24 days when examining the Nuggets. Michael Porter Jr., he got a lot of flack for being a guy that a lot of people believe was prone to poor shot selection, being lazy on defense, and not posing much of a threat off the dribble. However, it was some things that he did and learned how to do over the course of his several seasons in Denver that a lot of people just threw under the rug. And it ended up playing a big part in winning a championship. So, Cam, I think he'll figure it out. But like you said, when you're in those environments such as Brooklyn, where you're not really competing for much, and you go to Denver in a situation where you're on a contender for the first time since your early days in the league with Phoenix, it's an adjustment period. But I'm not necessarily panicking. But when it comes to them in clutch games, that's something that definitely has to be better and better execution down the stretch. You might be undefeated right now because they lost to the Portland Trail Blazers in their cup opener. And I believe they had an 18 or 19 point lead in that game. So that's been something that's been a trend as well in some of these games they've lost where they've had these big double digit leads, but they have been able to hold up. So we've discussed a franchise in the Nuggets that's trying to get back to the conference finals for the first time since taking home their first NBA championship just a couple of years ago. What about a team that made it there last year, the New York Knicks, who has bigger goals this time around and managed to bounce back after dropping their first game at home against the Orlando Magic with a win against the Miami Heat in NBA Cup group play last week? They entered the week sitting second in the Eastern Conference with an 8-4 record through their first 12 games as winners in six out of their last seven contests. Some say that they're right where they want to be coming into week five. However, they'll more than likely be without the services of two big pieces in the coming weeks as OG Anunoby went down in the Knicks win against Miami with a left hamstring injury and will be reevaluated in the next couple of weeks, while their all-star and Jalen Brunson could also be out of action in the midst of their five-game road swing that they're currently on due to him spraining his ankle late against Orlando. Losses that could be very critical to a New York squad who has yet to win a game on the road this season as we record this. I think New York is in a decent place to start the year. I give a lot of credit to Karl-Anthony Towns, who, in spite of some early struggles, I think has tried his best to play within Mike Brown's system and spread the wealth. He's not forcing opportunities to his credit. It's cool to see guys like Landry Shamet step up to the plate the way that he did. In that game against Miami, where he dropped 36 points, Definitely wasn't expecting that from him. And while that's not going to always be a nightly occurrence from the former Wichita State product, that's something that they may need here and there from him, or at least to be aggressive. And when he has these catch and shoot opportunities that they're creating within Mike Brown's offense for him to take advantage of. Mikal Bridges, I think, has played some solid basketball. I'm curious to see how Miles McBride fares in the games that he'll have starter minutes, because I'm pretty sure they're going to be patient with Jalen Brunson and not trying to rush him back right away. But they got to start winning some of these games on the road. That's been the big thing with them. Haven't won a game on the road all year. You take care of business in Madison Square Garden when you need to. I think players have responded to Mike Brown's offensive schemes and philosophies quite well. But what I'm curious to know, and I think we're going to find out over these next several games, is who exactly does Mike Brown trust on that bench? Because at the top of this week, when they opened up playing against Miami, I believe he only played Gershon Yabusele 10 minutes. And that was one of their big offseason acquisitions, and a guy that I expected a lot to at least help them
Dude
in the second
overrated.
unit.
Dude was overrated from the
That's
jump.
I mean, hey, we can agree.
I've
I'm
been
not saying
told y'all that.
I'm not saying that he's supposed to be this out of this world star or whatever.
Yeah, dude overrated over there. You know, a lot of people was hyped about that move, but I ain't see much of it. So I understand Mike Brown cutting his minutes short. But guys like Clarkson, Shamit, Josh Hart being able to come off the bench, Deuce, I think that's been great for him. But most importantly, man, Karl-Anthony Towns stepping up in November. You know, he started the season training camp saying he wasn't quite sure of how he was supposed to fit into this offense. And he's had a couple of 30-point games this month, and he's starting to get a lot more comfortable. What I'm looking forward to with the Knicks going forward is how Jalen Brunson's going to integrate himself back into this offense. And increase the ball movement because you got opposing players saying like, hey, they're going to be harder to defend now because the ball's not going to just be in JB's hands. Outside of that, shout out to Mike Brown. You know, I'm a Tibbs guy. I always like Tibbs as a coach. I think night to night, he gives you a chance to win even when you might not have the most talent. And Mike Brown's, he's the move so far is paying dividends. We're seeing guys seemingly a lot more happy. We're seeing a deeper rotation. So, looking forward to what else they can do over the next few weeks.
At some point, if the New York Knicks want to win, you got to start figuring out who are the key pieces within your rotation off the bench. I think starting five wise, they have a solid nucleus with one another when they're healthy. But guys off the bench are going to have to help them manage the fort while their two guys are down. Cat, to his credit, as you said, Torrence, he has picked it up as of late. And I know he came into the year nursing through a quad injury that he was trying to thug it out and play through. Kudos to him for that. But it's going to be some nights where they need some consistent minutes. And Miles McBride is also going to have to be one of those big X factors as well. And with them being on this road trip, I think it's going to be a big test for them, especially considering that they haven't won any games on the road to open up the year. But carrying along from the Eastern Conference, talking about a squad who plays its home games in Madison Square Garden to discussing another in the Western Conference, that if you take a 5.5 hour nonstop flight, you find yourself down in the desert with this bunch, and that's the Phoenix Suns, who enter the fifth week of the season sitting eighth in the play-in portion of the standings after capturing wins in five out of their last six outings, and despite taking advantage of a rather soft schedule, have taken care of the bottom half of the league for the most part, as Phoenix has earned six double-digit wins thus far after having only one this time last year, most of whom have come without the services of their grand acquisition in Jalen Green this past offseason, as the Suns come into the starter this week, sitting ninth overall in offensive rating and 12th overall in defensive rating, thanks to the play of Devin Booker and Dylan Brooks. It's quite interesting how when you have expectations that are not as high, but you have a core group of guys that have something to prove how much you can do. And even though they haven't played any juggernauts yet to start the year, I give the Suns a ton of credit for handling their business. Dylan Brooks, he's a guy that, like we said, 30 teams, 24 days. Everywhere he's gone, he's made an impact. And this dates back to his time in college with the Oregon Ducks. Been impressed with the level of play that he's exhibited thus far even in spite of injuries that he's had to navigate through the first 10 plus games of the year. Royce O'Neal has been a key veteran presence for this club, knocking down threes at a high clip, defending at a high level. Grayson Allen, prior to his injury, had some big games. And Devin Booker, you know, the face of the franchise, the guy that's been getting things done in a point guard situation. And then Colin Gillespie, an unsung hero, a guy that wasn't promised anything, looking like a guy that, with Jalen Green down, might have to be in the starting lineup. It's kind of been to Phoenix what a guy like TJ McConnell has been over the years to Indiana this season to start out. A guy that has made his presence felt defensively, picking up and knocking down shots, creating offense off the dribble. Really like his game. That's one of those reserves that a lot of fans need to get familiar with if they're not already. Kudos to Jordan Ott for really having this group together in his first year after coming over from Cleveland under Kenny Atkinson.
And one of the big things for this team, Mark Williams and Nick Richards, not necessarily the best center combination in the league, but definitely an upgrade over what they've had over there since DeAndre Ayton left the team. Dylan Brooks shoots way too fucking much. Like, that's really my big takeaway from the Phoenix Suns so far this year. I'm not really surprised by the start they're off to. They've had some relatively easy games, but I know a lot of people coming into the year had this team at the bottom of the Western Conference. We both spoke of them as saying, hey, like the Portland Trail Blazers, this will be a team. They might not win a lot of games. Doesn't mean that they're going to be playing bad basketball. And they're a pretty good basketball team so far that I've seen.
Yeah, he's shot a lot the last two games, but I think a lot of that has had to do with the fact that he's been pretty accurate from three-point land. Now, to his detriment, some of those ill-advised shots might have cost them against Atlanta the other night when they had a 20-plus point lead and they blew that one. But they got point guard play from Book and Colin Gillespie, who I really like a lot. And like you said, the center depth is much better, and they're doing this without even playing their rookie in extensive minutes just yet, and Kamal Malawach, who I feel like once they insert him into this rotation at some point, they can be even better. So they're right where I expected them to be, but I think a lot of people within the media were taking their frustrations out on the way the Kevin Durant era in Phoenix ended on these group of guys and not letting them prove themselves. But when I look at the situation in Phoenix, I'm more eager to see them once they get fully healthy and they get guys like Jalen Green back, who will be out for the next several weeks with a hamstring injury, and Grayson Allen, who's also out. And like I said, was really putting together some great minutes over there. So I like what I'm seeing from Phoenix. Now, let's see what you could do in the coming days when you have Minnesota coming into town for NBA Cup group play, a team that you struggled against and lost your last eight matchups against. Can you find a way to beat them? Because if you can, might get on the radar a little bit, because that's probably going to be one of their biggest tests coming up. And they got some big games with eight out of their next nine games against teams with winning records as well. So they got a tough stretch, but that's a team that you need to be keeping your eye on.
Yeah, and shout out to Royce O'Neal, man. Knocking down the three ball, providing defense. You know, he has an extensive hate club on the internet, and you check out why for yourselves. Hey, man, it snows in Scottsdale.
So we've talked about the team down in the desert. Well, let's get back to discussing this year's annual in-season tournament and our race toward the cup segment, where we managed to get a total of nine group play games around the league last Friday night, two of which managed to go into overtime, as you heard us discuss the double overtime thriller in the West Group B showdown that involved the Clippers and Mavs out in Dallas, while the other one occurred on the east side of things over in Group C between the defending cup champ Bucks and Hornets, as Milwaukee staved off 32-point outings from Con Caniple and Miles Bridges apiece with the help of Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kyle Kuzma, who would score a combined 54 points on the night to move to 2-0 in group play out at the Fiserv Forum. We'd also catch a hell of a contest in West Group C action between the Dubs and Spurs that would come down to the wire in a physical affair out in San Antonio, and Stephen Curry's 49 points would prove to be just enough to help Golden State outlast a 26-point, 12-rebound outing from Victor Wembanyama as they win by one to move to 1-1, a record each team in West Group C currently holds right now, as the Rockets will also garner their first dub in group play as well, defeating the Trailblazers out in H-Town, while shorthanded Pistons squad, led behind the player Javonte Green and Danish Jenkins over the last week, will prove to be more than enough to help Detroit knock off Philadelphia to move to 2-0 in East Group B, where they sit tied atop of the standings beside Orlando going into their final two games of group play action next week. Overall, I thought this was one of the best nights in Cup history to have the amount of close games that we got, back and forth play and action. These are the type of nights that you need to help solidify the event, and hopefully you can keep building off of it. I give a lot of credit to the Pistons. That was a game when you're without Jalen Duren, Cade Cunningham, Isaiah Stewart, finding a way to knock off a tough Philadelphia bunch where Tyrese Maxey, I believe, went off for 30 plus. That was huge. And I think Danish Jenkins is one of those guys that's put his name on the national radar over the last several days with the way in which he's played out of St. John's, a guy that was undrafted, signed a two-way deal, really been one of the more feel-good stories of the league in the early days of this season. Might have potentially played himself into some minutes and been a guy that, in some ways, you could say has been a Dennis Schroeder replacement and provided them with more pop in the scoring department. So I really like what I've seen from them as far as games to watch this upcoming week in Cup play. I would say the main game is Denver and Houston. That's really the main game. And then Portland and Golden State. Can Golden State find a way after pulling out a tough one last week, knocking off a upstart Blazer squad where Shaedon Sharpe over his last four games is averaging 30. And Denny Avdia has been playing at a borderline all-star level.
For me, the main event of last Friday was obviously Golden State San Antonio. See, I'm not the guy that's looking for a feel-good story on my sports. It's not a fucking Disney movie over here. I like competition, I like trash talk, and I like great players stepping up. And we got all of that in that game. Steph with his performance. We got Draymond and Wemby with their back and forth, their interactions. Draymond finally got dunked on. Didn't matter. De'Aaron Fox with the ill-advised shot down the stretch of that game. Something that, hey, he gets the right to do that. He was clutch player of the year at one point. You got a big 7'7" target down there. Might want to use him sometimes. Nonetheless, though, a lot of great games that night. Now, as far as this week coming up, you mentioned Minnesota and Phoenix. We're getting Devin Booker against Anthony Edwards, two Olympic teammates. And Minnesota currently has the highest point differential so far in Cup play at plus 54. So looking forward to that. You mentioned Denver and Houston. Not much needs to be said about Group C games. Golden State, Portland as well. Toronto, Washington. Hey, Toronto got a chance to go 3-0 in that group. They got a clear lead so far. I think they could be a very interesting team in knockout play. You got three guys over there that can give you 20 any night, and Emmanuel Quickley as well, somebody who I have my doubts about going into this season. And for you gamblers out there, OKC in Utah, I think that might be pretty interesting to look at from a variety of standpoints. Give you a hint, right now, Utah has the lowest point differential at minus 62 so far in the tournament. That's what I'm pretty much looking forward to from this week's race to the cup.
Yeah, Toronto, like you say, plus 23 point differential, best record in Group A right now, taking care of business against a Wizards squad that, as we know, is going to be among the bottom of the East this year. That's a must win for them. And if they are able to win it, like you said, putting them at 3-0, that's huge. And also keep in mind, their last two games of Group Cup play are going to be at home, as they played their first two Group Cup play games on the road and were able to emerge victorious in both of those contests. When you talk about the Warriors and the Spurs game, I didn't really have any issue with D-Fox taking that shot. Like you say, he's clutch player of the year. It's obvious that San Antonio gonna have to go through some growing pains and learn. I don't think the game was necessarily won or lost in that moment. I didn't mind the back and forth between Wemby and Draymond Green, but I appreciate Wemby not backing down in that moment, because we know that Dre likes to, he like to punk certain guys. And it's certain guys he could probably get away with that with in most cases. But I appreciate Wemby for letting them know, like, hey, I'm not one of those guys. And that was a game that felt a lot like a playoff game. And I'd say that's probably been the best game to air on Amazon Prime in their young days of covering the NBA thus far. So if you're into the action just like us, you know that there's always a nationally televised outing you can track each night around the NBA, starting with the ESPN Wednesday night doubleheader affair, where we'll see the league's top-ranked offense entering the week and the Houston Rockets travel to Cleveland to face the Cavs in the opening tilt at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, following Knicks versus Mavs down in Dallas for the nightcap outing, and on the following night get a chance to watch the reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week in Atlanta's Jalen Johnson, who will help guide the Red Hot Hawks out in the Alamo to square off against De'Aaron Fox and the Spurs in a showdown you could catch at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on NBA TV. While NBA Cup action, as you heard us discuss, returns to the forefront again on Friday with Pacers Cavs, followed by Nuggets Rockets as part of this week's Amazon Prime doubleheader. Also have the Knicks and Magic meeting once again, this time in Orlando, followed by a Central Division showdown between the Pistons and Bucks in Milwaukee as part of NBA TV Saturday doubleheader. The game that I'm looking forward to watching, or one of them at least, is a Cup game that I didn't highlight for a reason in the Cup segment. And that's the Miami Heat against the Chicago Bulls. Both teams are 1-1 in Group C. And even though they have negative point differentials at the moment, it's not by much. Whoever wins this game, you pretty much keep your hopes alive, possibly. If you lose, you pretty much forget about it. So that's one game that I'd definitely be monitoring on Friday night. Of course, Houston at Cleveland. That's a game this upcoming Wednesday that I announced earlier. I definitely have my eyes on that one. And Toronto at Philadelphia on Wednesday. Think that'll be a good game as well. Talked about the Raptors. I believe as we record this right now, the Raptors have the third best mark in the East at 9-5. They've won four games in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. Taking on a Philadelphia squad that is just above the play-in line at 8-5. But it's had success at home. And anybody who watches the league knows that Philadelphia is oftentimes one of the toughest places in the league to play. Should be a good one at Xfinity Mobile Arena. And then you got Philadelphia and Milwaukee on Thursday night. Don't know if Giannis will be able to play in that game as he left Monday's game with a left groin strain and that loss to Cleveland. But that's a game that if he's able to play in, I'd be curious to see. And even if he's not, I still would be because Ryan Wallace has been playing some fantastic basketball. Kyle Kuzma starting to come along. See who steps up in Giannis's absence potentially if he's not able to make it in that one. And then on Sunday, Portland at Oklahoma City. Like I said, Shaedon Sharpe been playing phenomenal basketball. One of the several players that you could probably insert in that most improved player conversation. However you want to rank them, it's up to you. But that's a big test. And we know Portland knocked off OKC not too long ago when they were playing them at home in Portland. Can they go into one of the league's toughest road environments and pull out a win there? Let's find out. I think SGA and Chet, though, if healthy, they may have other plans.
Yeah, I don't think people got a problem pulling up to Philly and taking care of business. We saw the Knicks do that in the postseason a couple years ago. OKC, now that's a different story for sure. Sunday, Orlando, Boston, the Celtics off to a slow start this season. Jaylen Brown and the rest of the team starting to heat up. They've had a pretty good month of November. Both teams have similar records right now as of this recording. Let's see if the Celtics can continue to make it interesting. We never know when Jason Tatum, if he's going to return this season, that's going to be looming, especially around All-Star break. And I'm sure the better that this team looks and the more the East continues to look wide open, possibility may increase. I don't think Jason Tatum looks at Detroit as a issue to get through if he's healthy, him and JB. So curious to see how Boston continues to play, still putting up that 40 to 50 threes a night as well. And Monday night, the doubleheader, Cleveland, Toronto, Houston, Phoenix. Think that's going to be a great doubleheader Monday night. So looking forward to those games this week.
Yeah, and that Detroit Milwaukee game, that might be another one you got to add to the list too on Saturday. That's going to be on NBA TV, especially if the Pistons can find a way to extend that winning streak because it's currently at 10 as we record this. Will it have snapped by then? Who knows? But if it doesn't, if it's extended, I think that should be a fun one. And shout out to Jalen Duren. He just recently had a 30-10 game, to kick off the week in grand fashion, hitting step back trades, showing some other skills in the toolbox that I didn't know he had. It's going to be some great games this week for sure. Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the New 24. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard throughout the first 39 episodes, including this one, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating, letting us know what you love about it across the platforms you use to listen to all your favorite podcasts, as we can't thank you enough for all of your support. Or just send us an email informing us of your thoughts on it directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platform for the New 24 across Instagram and X at @TNTF_ to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all of the latest currently trending around the NBA today. Don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed, where you can also check out our series such as Faces of the League on rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay in tune with us to get the insights you need on all around the league, as we'll be back next week to continue keeping you tapped in on it all. Once again, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrence Staggers, thanks for tuning in, as we hope that you enjoy the rest of your week. Be safe, and as always, peace.